Well, it seems to me that the nature of the ultimate revolution with which we are now faced is precisely this, that we are in process of developing a whole series of techniques which will enable the controlling oligarchy, who have always existed and presumably always will exist, to get people actually to love their servitude.
John Milton wrote in his famous refutation to the English government's attempt at censor, that constructive criticism of our leaders is far better than false flattery. George H. Sabine said during his commentary on Milton's Areopagitica that a free and open society's basic principle was the right and also the duty of every intelligent man as a rational being to know the grounds and take responsibility for his beliefs and actions. Its corollary was a society and a state in which decisions are reached by open discussion, in which the sources of information are not contaminated by authority in the interest of party, and in which political unity is secured not by force, but by a consensus that respects variety of opinion. A century and a half later, David Hume's most well-known work seems to concur with Milton and Sabine. Hume's A Treatise of Human Nature was met with a dead-born reception when it was first published. Nevertheless, it is still with us today. His ideas on human nature have found a wide audience in the 240 years since his death. Hume maintained that people were influenced far greater by their feelings than reason or logic. People made decisions based on emotional responses rather than rational thinking, stating that nothing appears more surprising to those who consider human affairs with a philosophical eye than the easiness with which the many are governed by the few, and the implicit submission with which men resign their own sentiments and passions to those of their own rulers. When we inquire by what means this wonder is effected, we shall find that as force is always on the side of the governors have nothing to support them but opinion. It is therefore on opinion alone that government is founded, and this maxim extends to the most despotic and most military governments, as well as to the most free and most popular. Even further still, another important 18th century philosophical thinker, William Penn, agreed with Hume's analysis of the human condition when saying, "Passion is the mob of the man that commits a riot upon his reason." What these men are referring to is the inability for the general masses to overcome their illogical emotions in order to awaken their ability to think reasonably, implying that one cannot expect to invoke reason, logic, or critical thinking when they base themselves solely in emotion. Is it coincidence that Milton, Sabine, Hume, and Penn are all virtually unknown amongst the populace today? They all take great strides in answering the very questions being asked herein. What has made our society so prone to propaganda? Why, in an era of potential infinite wisdom, has humanity been damned to a life of general ignorance? This series will attempt to provide the answers to these questions and will attempt to prove that while the people can rightfully bear much of the blame for their present apathetic position, it is by no means entirely their fault. This inability to remove emotion and think logically has been cultivated within the public's unconsciousness by men who were long ago corrupted, and the dissemination of propaganda throughout society has made it increasingly more difficult to fight back against these more morally degraded representatives of humanity. These power brokers have usurped the control mechanisms surrounding society, doing so specifically with the knowledge that the human mind is primarily emotional. They stop at nothing to keep the populace from understanding this fact, and they do everything within their power to keep the public mind in this illogical emotional state. Make no mistake, They have understood how to use this leverage of persuasion for some time now, all of them attending and even founding academic facilities in which students are taught these ideologies and philosophies, and are all well-versed in deceptive discourse, Aesopian language, and doublespeak, using information and knowledge that the public are no longer accommodated. They use techniques the public have never even heard of to play on their emotions in order to fulfill their larger agenda. This series will make available the tools once hidden to help one persevere through illogical emotional reaction in order to achieve a higher level of logical thinking through calm, reasoned response. In order to achieve this, we must first understand the rules of engagement. And like Sun Tzu said in The Art of War, we must first know thyself as well as thy enemy, for the battlefield upon which the next world war is being fought is upon the public mind. From the Greek logos, logic is an acquired knowledge. It does not come natural to the human being. Our first instinct when attempting to find the truth is to activate the irrational side of the brain. And when considering Quigley's six aspects of society, military, political, economic, social, religious, and intellectual, one finds little use for irrational thinking. Yet most continue to use their logical brain when dissecting logical topics within these aspects. And this most certainly does not serve the public well in attaining the truth, as logical thinking is not even being taught in the public education system. It seems to be mainly taught only through a costly liberal education, and has been hidden from the masses several times throughout human history, occasionally rescued for a moment, only to be hidden deeply once again. And thanks to the internet, we are presently living in an era in which this information has once again become available for all. Sigmund Freud, considered to be the father of psychoanalytics and the uncle of Edward Bernays, based entire theories on the proposition that human beings are firstly emotional and secondly logical. Dale Carnegie, the author of the wildly popular book How to Win Friends and Influence People, has made millions from this knowledge. A salesman's favorite, Carnegie's book can still be found at any bookstore, despite it first being published in 1936. Carnegie summing up the basis of the book succinctly writing that when dealing with people, remember you are not dealing with logical creatures, but creatures of emotion. As all of the previous quotes can attest, this principle of human behavior as primarily emotional has been firmly established and accepted within the relevant fields of study for centuries. A point that needed to be firmly established for this particular presentation on the history of propaganda. Richard Allen Nelson defines propaganda as a systematic form of purposeful persuasion that attempts to influence the emotions, attitudes, opinions, and actions of specified target audiences for ideological, political, or commercial purposes through the controlled transmission of one-sided messages, which may or may not be factual, via mass and direct media channels. Zbigniew Zeman separated propaganda into three categories. The first being white propaganda, which openly discloses its source and intent. Gray propaganda, which has an ambiguous or non-disclosed source or intent. And black propaganda, which purports to be published by the enemy or some organization besides its actual origins, a covert, nefarious form akin to clandestine intelligence operations run by the governments. Black propaganda is a form of censorship in that it intends to shut down the viewpoint of those it opposes while capitalizing on those with weak critical thinking skills and that are already sympathetic to its message or agenda by relying on persons' predisposed desire to accept only the information that is agreeable to their own beliefs. Children are often targets, or they are used to appeal to people's moral and ethical sympathies. in the United States, it used to be illegal for the government to partake in these kinds of actions against their own people. However, the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2013, Section 1078, amended the Smith-Mundt Act to allow for materials produced by the State Department and Broadcasting Board of Governors to be released within the U.S. borders. Media, a way by which something is communicated, a means or method, form, agency, channel, instrument, or mechanism, mass communication. It can also be defined as the material or form from which art is created. Also, a person claiming to be in contact with the spirit world, a necromancer, a channeler, who broadcasts spells on the air, a vessel between the spirit world and reality. When one looks closely, it is apparent that the mainstream media can be interpreted as all of these definitions wrapped into one. It is most definitely a means of communicating a message created like an artist would paint a picture. Few would find fault in that definition. Yet the media is also undoubtedly that which channels the spirit world, summons an invisible energy straight out of thin air, and presents it to the viewer by way of what seems like magic. When one removes any preconceived notions of what they think media is, we see that it is a program that is broadcast through the channels of an invisible energy wave on the air that travels directly into your home and is mainstreamed directly into the viewer's mind from the other side of the city, country, the world, or even the universe, that is meant to corrupt and disrupt natural thought patterns. People certainly stare at the rectangular glowing screen in their living rooms as if it were magic, as if it was God itself, perhaps, because that is exactly where it seems to originate, from the heavens. Prior to digging deeper into the history of propaganda, one final term remains to be defined. Understanding this third term is essential to understanding the media's traditional role within society. In defining this final term, we also become more familiar with our own place within the estates of the realm. The estates of the realm, consisting primarily of the three estates or classes in Western society. Originally, they were the broad orders of social hierarchy used in Christendom from the medieval period to early modern Europe. The first estate being made up of clergy or religious leaders, now considered by many to have been replaced by the state. The second estate, meaning the nobles or upper class just below the clergy, now being made up of opinion leaders like politicians, lawyers, or doctors. The third estate being the commoner, serf, or peasant, today represented by the dwindling middle class, made up of tradesmen, employees, and laborers. The fourth estate being the press, or news media, interestingly is a segment of society considered to be outside of the main realms. In modern Western civilization, we have now added the fifth estate, similar to the fourth estate, but made up of a second tier of media originating from out of the general populace, born from the necessity to keep our government accountable. These independent or investigative journalists, not part of the mainstream media, have been successful in doing what the mainstream is so unwilling to do. In addition to these five traditional realms, may I also offer for your consideration an additional sixth, the zero estate, the ones with which no name or number can be attributed, that parlay their craft before all others by way of privy council. The elite of the elite class of social engineers that secretly direct governments, entire countries, and in turn direct the entire world through a centralized bank debt strategy, blackmailing supposed world leaders towards their final end game. These unelected unwashed that contain no human emotion, the ones that practice psychopathy like a religion, playing both sides of world wars by using their philanthropic foundations, filling their already overflowing coffers in order to obtain the ultimate peak of power, the tip of the pyramid, and world domination. In a properly functioning democratic society, the fourth estate was to keep a watchful eye on the first and second realms on behalf of the third. However, this zero estate has been successful in usurping the entire operation. They have altered the role of the news media from its original purpose for its own gain. Now the mainstream media, and even large sections of the fifth estate, have been coerced or co-opted and have morphed into the second estate in order to do the bidding of the government. Instead of exposing the politicians for their endless contradictions, they are assisting in perpetuating them. And in doing so, these alleged media watchdogs, that once weren't even considered a part of the realm, have forced their way through the door while no one was looking. They left their former owners out in the cold in order to serve themselves, and have cuddled up to the warm illuminating fire right next to their new masters. Certainly, the media has traditionally been thought of as the main outlet to the truth, yet it has never really been so. The romantic notion that the Fourth Estate is acting as our watchdog, holding the government accountable, is complete fallacy. It has long ago conjoined with the government, corporations, and the entertainment sector into a four-headed serpent monster that feeds off of our minds and drains us of our souls like a zombie vampire. The Fourth Estate are one of the main practitioners of propaganda, and as Edward Bernays wrote in his book entitled Propaganda, have become the executive arm of the invisible government. The civilian population has blindly entered a contract that doesn't exist. They are born into a world of propaganda. They believe that the mainstream news has a vested interest in keeping the viewer informed, when in actuality their vested interest lies exclusively with its sponsors, advertisers, shareholders, its owners, and in the case of the CBC, even the Queen through the Governor General and the Prime Minister's office. These internal forces shape the news to fit a narrative friendly to the business interests of those sponsors in order to sell their products or services or ideologies, oftentimes skewing or discarding the truth altogether, long before it reaches our ears. If a news outlet agrees to a contract with a sponsor that is caught in a scam or a scandal, one must ask themselves a logical question. What are the odds that the news outlet will report the scandal responsibly when doing so would jeopardize the very money that is helping to keep the news outlet on the air? The truth is that this conflict of interest jeopardizes the trust of the American people. It leverages the risk of losing viewership against the loss of capital and influence. And one doesn't have to be a savant to predict the outcome of this gamble. This is what a corrupted form looks like, rotted from the inside. Soon enough, inevitably in fact, the viewership will recognize that they're being lied to, rid themselves of the burden of this one-way conversation, turn off their television, and cancel their cable subscriptions entirely. This remains to be the key question. Can the American public break from its addiction to the television and the cell phone to save itself? The internet has offered a viable alternative. It affords the consumer the ability to dictate the parameters of what was so stringently regimented before. The viewer can now pick and choose what they consume and when they consume it, well beyond the scripted, teleprompted, time-constrained message of the mainstream. The threat of the internet lies in its ability to throw off the status quo, to de-standardize or de-systemize information. Meanwhile, the media executives continue to bank on the public never realizing this Ponzi scheme shell game. Having underestimated and overestimated at the same time, and their fall from their executive offices high above the streets of New York, will be of the fantastical variety. They underestimate the intelligence of their viewers while overestimating the power that the media holds over them. A giant corporate conglomerate super freighter with billions in overhead, weighted down by lies, that can be silenced by a much sleeker, nimbler, versatile catamaran of truth that has opened up its sails to accept the blustering winds of change. In true industrialist fashion, their vision never really leaves the profit margin long enough to see how ill-prepared they actually are for the upcoming surge of public dismay. Ignoring any warnings of an impending Category 6 hurricane because they are too hooked into the revenue stream, arrogant in their abilities to outmaneuver the storm, failing to understand that they long ago passed the point of no return. For these mass media corporations, it can take years to chart an alternative course, and will figuratively and literally disappear into the deep, dark, static depths of obscurity with the ease of a push of the off button. As we near the conclusion of part one, we pull back to take a broader view of society's susceptibility to propaganda. While considerable blame can be laid at the feet of the mass communication industry, Bernaysian consumerism, and the exploitation of Freudian psychology, these are all merely small aspects within a larger game plan of persuasion. An omnipotent, deliberate effort with cultural debasement as its ultimate objective. This seemingly invisible, ambiguous force that has dominated the last five generations of Western culture aims at the complete overhaul of Western life and originates in the early 19th century communist Soviet Union. What today manifests under the guise of nebulous titles like political correctness, social justice, critical theory, and relativism has traditionally been known more broadly as cultural Marxism. And as disconcerting as this may be, it is true nonetheless that cultural Marxism began its long march towards the takeover of capitalism over a century ago and has been successful in deeply infiltrating every aspect of our society. Our political policies, our entertainment and academic institutions have largely been overtaken by this poisonous leftist doctrine, initiated largely by men like Max Horkheimer, Theodore Adorno, Herbert Marcuse, and Eric Fromm, all early members of what became known as the Frankfurt School. They combined failed Marxist political policies with Freudian psychoanalytics into the Frankfurt School's 11-point plan. And again, with the benefit of over a century of hindsight, we clearly see that they have nearly decimated Western culture, while most of the North American population, glued to their television, have been almost entirely unaware. Oftentimes, even fighting against their very own core beliefs, values, and freedoms that are associated with a free and open society. Today, we are seeing the results of combining what Lazarsfeld and Merton recognized as a narcotized general population with this insidious underground communist assault on Western values. Very clearly in the 11th hour of its existence, if Western culture has any hope of survival, it will be in the elimination of our blissful ignorance. It is now imperative for people to do more than merely participate in the largely symbolic exercises of standing with pride for our national anthem or honoring our soldiers by simply wearing a poppy, and educate themselves on the true meaning and purposes of the Canadian Bill of Rights and Freedoms and the United States' Declaration of Independence and Constitution. History will show that this is the final roll call to those who value our freedom to speak and think. We can no longer excuse the ignorant. We can no longer afford to leave it to the next generation to deal with. For in fact, if we do, the next generation will be the first to live fully immersed within a socialist, totalitarian, one-world state. And it is those living and breathing right now that history will rightfully point to for the purpose of vilification. Now, to be sure, within this introduction to propaganda, some fairly fantastic statements have been made. And any rational being would need verification prior to believing them. And throughout this series, we will back them all up with empirical evidence, primary citations, irrefutable documentation, and even admissions from those involved. It is the explicit aim of this series to leave no doubt within the minds of the viewers that nothing is as it seems. Nothing that the news media, our politicians, or entertainers say is true. And we are all unknowing victims of a massive propaganda campaign that envelops everything we do.
Shopping for this holiday season. It's okay, you can admit it if you've bought an item or two or ten for yourself.
Well, it's okay, you can admit it if you have bought an item or two or maybe ten for yourself.
It's okay, you can admit it. You've bought an item or two or ten for yourself.
It's okay, you can admit it if you bought an item or two or ten for yourself.
It's okay, you can admit it if you bought an item or two or ten for yourself.
It's okay, you can admit it if you bought an item or two or 10 for yourself.
It's okay, you can admit it, Todd. If you bought an item or two or 10 for yourself.
It's okay, you can admit it. If you bought an item or two or 10 for yourself.
It's okay, you can admit it. If you bought an item or two or maybe 10 for yourself.
It's okay, you can admit it. If you bought an item or two or 10 for yourself.
It's okay, you can admit it. If you bought one or two or maybe three or four, maybe even 10 items for yourself.
It's okay, you can admit it. If you bought an item or two or 10 for yourself.
It's okay, you can admit it.